If we go into a location and I get my EMF meter going off a couple of times, you know, I'll say that's cool. But when I have the EMF meter going off and I capture a voice on my voice recorder and I'm capturing things on my night vision video camera and I see things on the thermal imaging camera, I'm building my case of compelling evidence that I can't explain.
Frankly IT, straight talk for IT leaders everywhere.
Hey, this is Jennifer Tribe, and you're listening to Frankly IT, episode 73. You can probably already tell this isn't your typical Frankly IT episode. Our podcast description says we go off the beaten path to bring you interesting interviews, and oh boy, this time we went way off the path. Into the deep, dark woods. It's Halloween, so I decided to explore the intersection of IT and the paranormal. Yeah, that's right. We're taking our tech and we're going ghost hunting. My guest today is paranormal researcher Christy Sumner. Christy and her team travel all over the U.S. to capture proof of ghostly apparitions with a whole range of gear, from an adapted AM/FM radio called a spirit box by those in the biz, to thermal cameras, laser grids, and voice recorders. Today, she walks us through how the tech works, why spirits love using technology to communicate with us, and some of the best evidence she's ever uncovered that ghosts are real. Will this information help you be a better IT leader? Doubtful. But hey, sometimes you just have to get your geek on and have some fun.
You're listening to Frankly IT, brought to you by Avic Networks.
Hi, Christy. Welcome to Frankly IT.
Thank you, Jennifer. I appreciate you having me today.
I'm excited to have you on the show because we're going down a different path than we normally go. This is going to be an interesting episode for us and a fun one, I hope. So you are a ghost hunter. You have a company called Soul Sisters and you go looking for ghosts. And yet you have a background. You have a PhD in public affairs with an emphasis on criminal justice. And You've been a consultant on biometric credentialing and clearances. Mm-hmm. So how does one go from that to ghost hunting?
Well, it's actually an interesting story. You're right. My team is Soul Sisters Paranormal, and it's made up of myself, my twin sister, our younger sister, and two female family friends. And we actually all have an advanced degree. So I've got a PhD, as you mentioned. My twin sister has a PhD. Michelle and Cara have JDs, and Kim has a master's degree. And we really come at this with a research-minded background, and we really put that to work, our academic background. And it started, honestly, as a girls' trip in 2013. My sisters and I have always been fascinated with the subject of the paranormal, and we would watch the popular television shows, and we'd say to ourselves, why didn't they ask these questions? Why didn't they use this tool? Why didn't they try this technique? And so we said to ourselves, if we ever had the opportunity to go on a paranormal investigation or conduct one, we would jump at that opportunity. So in 2013, we had the opportunity to go to the West Virginia State Penitentiary in Moundsville, West Virginia. We had a family friend that sat on the board of that facility, and he said, I know you're taking a girls' trip this year. Why don't you come up to Moundsville, stay the night in the prison, and see what you find? And so we did. We had voice recorders. We had a couple of digital cameras and just some really inexperienced in what we were doing at that point, very rudimentary. And so we went in, locked ourselves in the prison for the night, and came away with such compelling evidence of unexplained phenomena that we decided to formalize Soul Sisters Paranormal. We are self-funded. This isn't a company that we get paid for or anything like that. But we said to ourselves, why don't we put our academic background to use and really research the historical component of where we're going, as well as the paranormal claims of those locations as well.
So we're really interested in the technology aspect and the technology connection here. That very first trip to West Virginia, you mentioned some digital voice recorders, some digital cameras. Tell us what you used on that trip and what you were able to collect with it.
We actually just use regular Sony digital voice recorders. You can get them off Amazon for like $30, I think, because we go into these locations with a healthy skepticism. And that's the first investigation is how we approached it. Kind of like, well, let's just see what we can find, if anything. Just have a really fun experience, if nothing else. Like I said, we had those voice recorders, just some digital cameras, our cell phones. Back then, they weren't as great as they are now. But when we were in the moment, we were hearing things audibly, footsteps, door slams, and stuff like that. But when we went back after we left and reviewed the audio footage that we captured, we were hearing men's voices, whether there were no men in the area. We were hearing footsteps, those footsteps that we heard audibly, we captured on those voice recorders. And so that to us was just validation that something unexplainable was going on here. And since then, we have increased our arsenal of technological equipment. We use things like EMF meters now, thermal imaging cameras, night vision video cameras, AM/FM radios that have been converted to sweep through those frequencies. So we have a much broader range of technology in those devices that we pull on now.
So tell us about some of this gear. So let's start with the EMF meter. What is that? How does it work?
Basically, it's a handheld device, and it was designed actually for electricians to find electricity in houses and buildings and such. And so then paranormal investigators decided that, you know, why don't we try this in paranormal investigations? Because if you subscribe to the theory that as humans, we are made up of energy and energy cannot be created or destroyed, then when we die, that energy has to go somewhere. And so the EMF meters are used to try to measure that energy or find that energy that is left over by spirits that inhabit a location. And so, like I said before, it's a small handheld device. It has a light array on the top of it from green to red. And so if I'm in an area where I know that there's absolutely no electricity in the area, and I know that we have nothing on us that causes electromagnetic energy to disperse from our person, such as cell phones or anything like that, then theoretically that light array should not move from green. But we have instances where we're in a location that we can set it down and start asking questions and the light will go to red. In just the normal day, I found that if I just take that EMF meter around my normal house and I put it up to things like a microwave or the refrigerator or the hairdryer, those are the type of appliances that will get that to go all the way to red. So when I'm in these locations, again, then I know that there's no power, there's something very strong acting upon it energy-wise that will get that light array to go to red. And we've had several instances where we will sit down in a room, again, I know there's no power, sit this device in the middle of the room and start asking questions, and the light array will jump to red, spike to red. So that's an enormous amount of energy that I can't explain where it's coming from, and it's responding to me intelligently. So that's what the EMF meter does. It measures that electromagnetic energy.
So are ghosts just basically energy balls then?
That's personally what I believe. I believe that once we die, the energy that makes us, it has to go somewhere. So I believe that the energy that we're communicating with at some point had a human existence. They lived a human existence, and that's what we're communicating with. For some reason, that specific spirit or that entity has not ascended to the next realm or heaven or whatever's next, whatever you want to call it, they're earthbound. So those are the entities that we're trying to communicate with when we use this equipment. Yes.
So would that mean that this sort of EMF meter should work every time you think there's a presence of a spirit? Or does some technology work some of the time and some of the technology work other times?
That's a great question. So there are a lot of instances where the EMF meter won't work. We'll go through a large penitentiary or an insane asylum and it won't blip at all. And to me, that actually validates the times when it does. Because if we had it going off every time we turn it on, then I would start to question the validity of it and how accurate it really was.
And what does that mean then? That the entity or the spirit, the energy isn't there, but there's something else there?
Or there could be nothing there at all. Or in that moment that the spirit or the entity doesn't want to speak with us. We've had instances where we go into a location that is reported to be haunted and we can't validate anything or any of those claims. And that doesn't mean in our mind that it's not haunted. It just means that night we didn't capture anything unexplainable to us. It's kind of like fishing in a way. Not every place that we go to is going to have unexplained evidence.
All right. So you mentioned also thermal imaging cameras. So What do you pick up with that?
So again, we're going back to the spirits of that are energy. And a lot of paranormal investigators believe that spirits manifest. If they do manifest, it's going to be cold rather than warm. So we'll take a thermal imaging camera. It's actually a device that hooks to my iPhone and that will allow us to see in that thermal imaging spectrum. And so there have been times where we captured things that we can't explain in that moment, whether it be a quick cold spot or something crossing in front of it that is colder than the rest of the environment. It's not one of our tools that we use a lot, but when we bring it out every now and then, we will have success with it because it's just one more tool that we use to validate things that we can't explain.
Now, you said the energy is is cold. So that's interesting because energy normally would be warm, right? So how is that explained?
They manifest themselves by taking the temperature of the environment and then dropping colder. You'll be standing in a room that has a certain temperature, and then all of a sudden the temperature will drop in that room very quickly. And in those instances, we've had a great percentage of those instances where when the temperature drops, we either capture something on our night vision video cameras, the laser grid, or our digital cameras or our digital audio recorders. For us in the paranormal community, a cold spot represents some type of energy draw that the spirits are using to really manifest or make their presence known to us.
You also mentioned a modified AM/FM radio. What is that?
So in this paranormal community, we call that the spirit box. Essentially what it is, it's a small AM/FM radio. It fits in the palm of my hand. And if you turn it on, it can act like a normal radio. You know, it picks up AM and FM frequencies. You can hear, you know, country music stations or whatever, but it's been modified with what we call a sweep button. So when you hit the sweep button, it very quickly sweeps through these frequencies. So like a half a second, a fifth of a second, it's hitting every other frequency. So when you turn it on, you hear the as it's going through these frequencies. So essentially what it causes is white noise. It causes white static noise. And the theory is that the spirits can use that energy in that spirit box to speak through the white noise, and we can hear them audibly. So again, it's another tool in our arsenal, but we've had very compelling evidence with that spirit box. As it's sweeping through these frequencies, theoretically, I should never hear a phrase. Because it's going so fast through these frequencies, it's almost impossible to hear a phrase normally. But for example, we took it to a location known as the Ma Barker House in Central Florida. And this is a house that was involved in the 1935 shootout between Ma and Fred Barker, who were gangsters, and the FBI. And the culmination of the shootout was Ma and Fred were killed in this house. So we took the spirit box up into the room where they found their bodies after the shootout. And we turned on the spirit box, and it's sweeping through those frequencies. You can hear it. You can hear the And I say, what happened in this room? And very clearly, through the spirit box, you get a phrase, and it says, they murdered us, we the ones dead. Very clear. Again, that should not happen. But the fact that it did happen, and that it was germane to the situation, it was germane to this house where these bodies were found, the FBI did kill them and murder them, and they are the ones dead. You know, that to me is extremely compelling. And that is a device that we use with great success in a lot of locations.
You're listening to Frankly IT, brought to you by Avic Networks.
So ghosts have a bit of a reputation for trying to hijack technology to communicate. Right? We can all think of that famous scene in Poltergeist in the TV.
Yes.
Do you know of other examples where, you know, not investigators out with a whole trove of technology, but just everyday folks and ghosts or spirits are trying to communicate through something like a radio or a TV?
Oh, yeah. There's numerous instances where regular people will put these out and say, I can't explain this. You know, I was listening to the radio and I swear my dad's voice came through. Or there's been reports of people hearing things through their cell phones, that they'll be having a conversation and something will come through. Now, am I saying that is all paranormal? No, I'm not. But to that person in the moment, it could be. I shared with you an example of a guy who was in Colorado. He reported his family missing, his wife and two children. The cops showed up at his house and they were interviewing him, and the cop's body camera was watching him and the television right beside of him. And on that television screen was the security footage camera that his neighbor was showing to try to see if they could see the wife coming and going on that security camera. And so as they're watching this, the neighbor was flipping through the different cameras that he had and the different scenes. And the guy that reported his wife missing was standing there watching this. The cop was standing there watching this, and the body camera was filming it. And very quickly, the scene, a picture of a fetus jumped up, followed by the picture of a skull. And it looked like the skull was in oil. And you can see this, it's on YouTube. And it just so happens that the guy ended up being the murderer of his family. He killed his wife and he killed his children. The wife was pregnant when he killed her, and he disposed of the kids' bodies by throwing them in an oil can. So a lot of people in the paranormal community have been analyzing that video, and they're convinced that it's the wife trying to get a message out to the police officer that's standing there. Is it paranormal? I don't know. Is it a very, very strange coincidence that that happened? I do. I do think that that's a very strange and unlikely coincidence that that happened at that exact moment. So things like that are very unexplainable, and that's what we're looking for when we do this.
So if spirits can use radio frequencies, and they're basically balls of energy, and so they can communicate with us by way of machines that pick that up, why aren't they communicating with us more as our technology develops and it becomes more ubiquitous?
I think they are, but a lot of people aren't in tune to that. You know, I like to say everybody hears, but not a lot of people listen. And so when things like that happen, a lot of people just brush it off as a coincidence, or, you know, I don't believe it, therefore I'm not going to say anything about it. I do think that there are a lot of instances where that happens.
You've got this whole set of technology that you can take out into the field. Obviously, this was a equipment that we didn't have, say, 50 years ago or 30 years ago to be able to do this. Do you think that as technology evolves, we'll get closer to definitive proof one way or the other that these are actually spirits?
I think there's more proof coming. Yes, I think there's a lot of paranormal investigators in the field that are offering some very compelling evidence. But the problem that I see, and this is just me personally, is it's going to be very hard to say this is a definitive answer because everybody's belief system is different. If we all came from the same starting point, that same belief system, then yes, we would get to something that we all consider the holy grail, if you will, of afterlife or existence of the afterlife. But because everybody's coming from a different standpoint and a different background and belief system, I think it will be hard to say universally that this is the answer. Because, you know, if you look at paranormal investigators now, some of the evidence that they're putting out there is extremely compelling. You know, some of the things that my team personally has found, I can't explain. When I'm capturing a man's voice on a voice recorder, and I can absolutely verify to you that there are no men in the area or even on the property that night, that is something that's very hard for me to explain. And I think it says there's something after this. But again, if I'm talking to somebody who's a complete skeptic or a cynic, then they're not going to believe that. So coming to an end-all, be-all solution or answer, I think it's going to be very difficult. But to your point, as technology evolves, I think we'll get better evidence.
Tell us your best story then, the one that you think is the most compelling in terms of what you saw or heard.
Okay, I'll actually give three quick examples if you don't mind. The first one happened at the Fort Mifflin, which is in Philadelphia, and this is a Revolutionary War fort. So you can go to this fort today. You can go into the casemates where they stored munitions during the Revolutionary War. You can go into the soldiers' barracks. It's reported to have a lot of paranormal activity. So again, we go in with that healthy skepticism and we set up what I call stationary equipment. So we know that we can't be in every casemate or every barrack during our investigation. So we set up cameras and voice recorders that we leave running through the duration of our investigation because we like to have eyes and ears on each location in the area. There's a casemate called Casemate 11 and it's a subterranean casemate. It was used as a solitary confinement cell in the Revolutionary War. So you go down about 7 feet under the ground, and it's a small brick room. I'd say comfortably six people could fit in this room. It's very tight. It's very dark. There's no light pollution that can get into this room at all once the door is closed. So we had set up a night vision video camera, and directly beside it, we set up a laser grid to go into the room. And the idea being that if something walks across the room, it'll cut off the beams of the laser grid and we'll be able to see it more clearly on our night vision video camera. And during the night, we captured a shadow figure that walks from right to left across the screen, and it cuts off every beam of the laser as it's walking across the room. So it looks to be about 5.5 to 6 foot tall. It's one of the best shadow figures that we've captured on any of our investigations. So that was extremely compelling to us. And then we did an investigation at the old Gilchrist County Jail, which is in Trenton, Florida. And this is a small jail. It was built in 1928 and it operated until 1968. And it has four cells on the bottom floor and four cells on the second floor. And then a small jailer's house that's connected to it, that's connected via a doorway. If I could call an investigation a pure investigation, I'll do it here because that night, every piece of equipment that we had was validating every other piece of equipment, which to me is extremely compelling, because if we go into a location and I get my EMF meter going off a couple of times, you know, I'll say that's cool. But when I have the EMF meter going off and I capture a voice on my voice recorder and I'm capturing things on my night vision video camera and I see things on the thermal imaging camera, I'm building my case of compelling evidence that I can't explain. And that's what happened at the old Gilchrist County Jail. We had our EMF meters that were going off, and there's no power to this location. It was going off on command when we were asking questions. We were capturing things on our spirit box. We have a device called an SLS camera. And generally speaking, this is an iPad connected to a camera that has an algorithm in it. And when you sweep it across the room, if that algorithm perceives any living thing in the room, it will put it as a stick figure on the screen. So if you were in a room and I point this camera at you, you would come up as a stick figure on that iPad screen. And so we were using that SLS camera and we were seeing those stick figures on the screen as we were walking through the jail that night. We were seeing shadow figures. We captured several shadow figures on our night vision video camera. So that investigation to me was the greatest in terms of every piece of technology and equipment we had that night was going off and validating every other piece of equipment. And then the third one would be Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary in Tennessee. And we've done two nights there. And the first night we were capturing footsteps that I can't explain, voices that I can't explain, one of the night vision video cameras that we had left stationary in one of the cell blocks. And during the night, when we're not even anywhere near the cell block, you can see rocks coming out of the darkness, just hitting this camera. And it happened for hours, just boom, 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 rocks coming out and hitting this camera. So that is extremely unexplainable to me. And then the second investigation that we did there about a year later, we actually captured shadow figures on our cameras. So Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary is an amazingly active location in our mind.
And speaking about some of the stuff that was coming up in the technology, I totally forgot when we first joined this recording session, right? So I have my mic connected and cameras going and everything, and we're just about to start and my mic just cuts out. It's like, mic's disconnected. And I'm like, what the heck? Like nothing happened. I didn't jiggle a wire, like nothing. And you told me this has been happening lately.
It has. It's actually uncanny. I gave 4 interviews last week, and 2 of them specifically, we were talking about the Ma Barker house. And the first one, as we were talking, the audio just kept going in and out, in and out. And when we reconnected for like the 4th time, the gentleman told me that he has never had technical issues ever. And so that was intriguing to me. Then the very next day, I was speaking with a woman and she recorded the podcast. And when she was going back to edit it, she messaged me, she sent me a text message and said, I've been trying to edit this for about 6 to 7 hours. And every time I think I'm done, my audio will just disappear and I can't find it. It's not on my computer. So it is very interesting and coincidental, some of the things that have been happening lately.
All right. Yeah, that gave me a few goosebumps. Do you have links to any of these videos or audio files that you mentioned you've collected at these sites?
Absolutely. When we go to these locations, the first thing that we're interested in doing is highlighting the historical narrative of these locations, because I feel that the history behind this and what we do is so important that even if we don't capture what I feel is compelling unexplained evidence, we'll still put together a video of the historical location and why it's important in history. So all of those documentary videos are on our website at www.soulsistersparanormal.com. Again, what we do is we'll put that historical narrative in as our intro. We'll explain to you the investigation style, what we have done, the cameras that we put out, the technology that we've used, and then any unexplained evidence that we captured during that night to round out the episode. And then we also have those on our YouTube channel under Soul Sisters Paranormal. And then I also do what I call quick clips. So if you don't want to watch the entire video of a location, we just have quick clips to the evidence that we've captured. They're about 1 to 2 minutes long. So you can find those there as well.
That's awesome. I'm going to put links to all of those in the show notes for everybody to check out. Thank you so much for joining me today, Christy. This has definitely been fun, as I expected it would be.
Absolutely, Jennifer. I appreciate the time.
That was Christy Sumner of Soul Sisters Paranormal. Christy mentioned a whole bunch of videos on the Soul Sisters YouTube channel. There are documentary videos about their visit to the Ma Barker House, the Gilchrist County Jail, Fort Mifflin, and many others besides. I will, of course, put links to all of those in today's show notes if you want to check them out at avic.com/franklyit/073. That link again, avic.com/franklyit/073. I'll also put a link to that video Christy mentions where a fetus and a skull seem to appear on security cam footage while the police are talking to the killer. Happy Halloween. I hope you enjoyed this little technical detour on the Frankly IT journey. That's a wrap. Till next time, this is Jennifer Tribe. Stay spooky out there.
Frankly IT. Brought to you by Avic Networks. Own the network.